last time, when we were finishing up, we introduced this idea of doing what I called a distributed transaction. We would have multiple machines working together. An example I gave is we might have a course database distributed across multiple machines, and maybe we decided that some machines would handle student records and some would handle course records, but sometimes we'd want to update both at the same time. Like adding a student to a course, we'd update the student record to say the student's in this course, and the course record to say the course has this student. And sort of our naive way of doing that is that we had someone doing the update who would ask a remote machine to update records, then update locally. And we mentioned in the remote scheme that we had a problem that if we checked here, even if nothing failed, here we got inconsistent results. Meaning that when we checked the machines, we could see, you know, something strange happening. That a student was in a course but shouldn't have been. And now I'm asking, let's say we have a machine lose power and restart, and this is our algorithm for doing the update. What problems are possible? And probably it's going to be more than was possible with the old scheme. With the original scenario where I said, we just said, you know, just normally no failures, we have problems. So how bad are our problems if, you know, we have both, if we have machines losing power and restarting at some point? There might be some questions about what the machine state machines are keeping. You know, let's assume, you know, that you've written the most natural version of this program. Give another 30 seconds or so. Okay, so let's go through each of these possibilities, and I'll start with the ones there's the most consensus on. So we could say, so there's most consensus on B and D here, and for B, we're saying that we find that yes, they're in the student record, which is, remember, the local one, but they're not in the remote record. And could this happen? Well, we haven't specified some details, so I think it could. So one way we could imagine this happening is that, let's say I tell the remote machine, I didn't actually say I asked wait for a response back. So maybe I tell the remote machine and then it crashes. And that would be a way for that to happen. If I waited for a response back, then it seems like that shouldn't be possible. Possible, but assuming that when we got the response back, that meant adding the student was fully done and not like partially done. So an example of partially done is maybe it was written to memory but not written to disk. But assuming it was actually added and we actually waited for a response, which I didn't specify, so definitely possible that we don't do that, that would be a potential problem. As for D, I think this is the most obvious way for this to happen is, let's say we have a crash of the local machine here. And if we didn't store somewhere that we were in the middle of adding a student to a course, we haven't done it yet, so the student's not in the course yet. So after telling remote, but without remembering what it was doing. And that remembering what it was doing, that's going to be a hint for how we're going to deal with this problem. So then we have the scenarios where we have some transient disagreement, where, it looks wrong temporarily, but then it looks right. And I think some version of these is also possible. Again, depending on what our assumptions are about, like, whether we wait for a yes, I did this response. So, for example, if we don't wait for a response when we tell the remote machine, add the student to the course, maybe remote machine took a while to get message. So if we didn't wait for a response, we told it, it worked successfully, it took a while to get the message, and the power loss and restart happened at some irrelevant time, like, after we did everything, or after, on the remote machine, after it actually recorded the change. So that would be a way A would be possible, and C would be possible if you check in this time window here, assuming the remote machine did the operation very quickly, we have that little time window where locally it's not in the record isn't updated, but the remote one was. So, depending on what we assume the details of this algorithm are, we can imagine all of these scenarios being possible. And this seems awfully inconvenient. So we're going to talk about systematic ways of fixing this, and part of this is going to be about making sure our tell someone to do an operation, waits for a did you actually do it? But we're going to have to do something a bit more subtle to deal with these sort of transient inconsistencies, and also to deal with, making sure we remember what we were doing when we lose power in the middle of that. So before I move on, I'm going to review other things we did last time, but before I do that, any questions about this scenario? Okay. So that was so starting distributed transactions was the last topic we talked about last time. Before talking about that, we talked about a more abstract model for communicating between machines. And this was the idea of remote procedure calls, where we'd imitate our normal function or method calls and basically provide the same interface. Now, we learned that there were a few extra steps. So one of these steps was we needed to specify where is the server where the calls are actually happening. So we just inevitably need extra code to make sure we communicate that information, or extra something. We also had sort of extra concerns we didn't have with a traditional library. Like, we cared about portability between different languages and machines. And we needed some way of dealing with things like pointers. So our usual solution for this was, rather than writing a header file like we would for a library, we'd have a special interface description language specifying what our function calls were. I guess I mentioned portability as one concern. Another big concern that we didn't have with libraries was forward and backward compatibility. We wouldn't have as much because we wouldn't be recompiling things when we upgraded the server on the client necessarily. The server would get upgraded and the same client would be running, and we needed to make that work. That was remote procedure calls. Then we started talking about failures. And to start talking about failures, we need to think about how do things fail. And for network failures, we said we were going to assume that our failures were limited to losing messages and reordering. We assumed that messages being corrupted, we could avoid somehow. The actual solution is generally checksums. Then we talked about ways machines fail, and we had two kind of extreme models. We had this Byzantine failure model, where the machine does something really bad. And I'm mentioning that because, yes, people care about, you know, dealing with more failures, you know, really bad failures. But for the most part, we're going to be focusing on the fail-stop model, where when a machine fails, it's like it loses power or gets disconnected. It might not actually, but it's going to behave like that, and that's going to make it possible for us to use much simpler solutions, assuming failures act like that. Whether they do in the real world, the answer is, of course, sometimes. And given this model, we wanted to make this idea of a distributed transaction, which is what that exercise was about, where we wanted something to happen across multiple machines. So in the example, it was because I stored some things on one machine, some things in another, but I wanted to update them both together because they're like storing different parts of the same information. And we wanted it to happen all at once or not at all. We didn't want sort of an in-between result of, you know, the professor's view of sys says you're in the course, your view of sys says you're not. You want it, you know, one way or the other, nothing else. And I've shown you that this sort of naive solution for that doesn't work, and today we're going to talk about a solution which will work, assuming, again, this fail-stop model. So before I move on to that, any questions about other things we covered last time? So I'm going to introduce a solution to the distributed transaction problem, which is decentralized. So I'm pointing this out because there's a simple solution, which is you put everything on one machine instead of on multiple machines. We're not going to do that because that, you know, kind of defeats the reason why we had things use multiple machines. So in this solution, each machine is only going to handle its own data. So in our example of having like separate student and course records, if we split the students across multiple machines and I'm updating, adding a student to a course, then I'm only going to talk to the machines with student records for the student I'm adding. I'm not going to talk to machines with students that aren't involved in the operation. So the machines are going to be involved in the transactions only if they have relevant data. So this is going to allow us to hopefully scale, meaning that, you know, the reason I presumably split things up across multiple machines is because it was too much for one machine. So, you know, if it's too much for one machine, we better not have everything use one machine. We want actually to use separate machines for each thing. Now, another sort of silly solution we want to avoid, I mentioned avoiding the solution where we do everything with one machine. Another silly solution we want to avoid for distributed transactions is make everything read-only. This solves the consistency problem. Things happen all at once or not at all because nothing happens. But it's not a very satisfying solution. And we also want to avoid kind of in-between versions of that. So we're going to say that we want a solution that, as long as things don't fail, makes progress. It's going to be okay if, when things fail, we don't make progress, so long as, you know, so long as it's the case that, you know, when that machine comes back, we can get things back to working order. But we're not going to assume in this model that when a machine fails, we can keep going. We just don't want to get inconsistent results as a result of that failure. And especially, we don't want to get inconsistent results as a result of, you know, something, you know, failing and then coming back. Which you saw in our example, if we did something naive, we could end up with something being inconsistent forever because a failure happened and we didn't do the right bookkeeping around that. So we're going to have a scheme that systematically avoids that. And sort of the hope of this is that our scheme is going to scale to tens or hundreds of machines. Now, people do this in practice, and they don't have each transaction use tens or hundreds of machines. And they typically don't even have tens or hundreds of machines. So our typical, like, actual use case for this is going to be, like, 1 to 3. But, you know, even if we only have 2 or 3 machines, we still need to do all this coordination we're going to talk about. So what's our solution that has these properties? It's going to be something called two-phase commit. And the name is a hint for how it works. There's 2 steps. You know, so step 1 is figure out what we're going to do. Step 2 is do it. And this should remind you of redo logging. With redo logging, we had 2 steps. We record what we're going to do, and then we do it. And we're going to use the same kind of idea, but we're going to do that across multiple machines. We're first going to figure out what we're going to do, then we're going to do it, and by separating these steps, we can ensure that everyone agrees on what we're going to do before we do it. Okay. Now, as part of this process, I'm going to need to deal with failures. And there's a question of, like, if a machine goes down, what happens to the data on that machine? And we need to make more precise assumptions than I've made by just saying it's like it loses power, because we know when a machine loses power, it loses stuff in memory, but not on disk, sort of our model. And we're going to want to be explicit about things the machine needs to keep despite losing power. And we're going to use, you know, reuse an idea from when we talked about redo logging, which is that we're going to have a log on each machine. So to deal with a machine temporarily losing power, each machine's going to have a log. And the property we need for this log is that when we write something to the log, it's still going to be there when the machine reboots, you know, even if it loses power, as long as it loses power after we write something. And the purpose of this is that it's going to be really important that the machine remembers what it was doing when a failure happened. This is how we're going to avoid getting into an inconsistent state, is by systematically making sure we write down what we were doing. And to make this work, you know, we need to record what we are doing, what we are about to do, before doing it. So it's the same idea as redo logging. In order to make this useful, we're going to record, I'm about to do this, in a persistent log. So if we have a power loss or a crash while we're doing that, we remember, oh, that's what I was doing. Now, it might be the case that sometimes we didn't start doing that thing, and that's going to be fine. We're just going to do it anyways, which is not a problem because we wanted to do it. So it's going to be fine. Now, we have this persistent log. This is going to be per each machine in the transaction. And all this log is only going to be about things on that machine. You know, what that machine's trying to do, what decisions it's made. And that means that, for example, unlike our redo log, we're not going to write down all the information for the transaction in one place. We're just going to have some identifier so the multiple machines working together can figure out, oh, this is part of the same operation. Questions about sort of our logging requirements. So now we have sort of our setup, we know what failures we handle, and we know we have this mechanism of keeping data despite a machine failing and coming back later. And we're going to divide our machines into two types of machines. We're going to designate one machine as a coordinator, and as the name suggests, the coordinator is going to be responsible for helping all the other machines work together to perform the transaction. We're going to call the other machines workers. Now, I'm going to treat these as if they're separate machines. In common implementations, typically one physical machine will run a coordinator program and a worker program just on the same machine. But they don't have to be the same machine. And basically, as this name might suggest, the workers are going to be kind of passive and mostly just talking to and from the coordinator. And the coordinator is going to be responsible for, like, starting the transaction, telling the workers, you know, what it involves. And to make this work, you know, all these machines are going to have a say in whether the transaction happens. Because remember, we want something to happen all at once or not at all. And our key rule to keep that consistency is going to be that we're going to abort the transaction, meaning don't change anything, don't do it, you know, don't commit it if anyone, any of these machines, decides to abort. So everyone has a veto power. And that means that that means that if any machine has a problem doing the transaction, we're just going to stop it and not do it. And in order to make sure, you know, we're consistent about this, we're going to collect what I'll call votes. So the coordinator is going to collect votes from the worker saying, hey, can you do this or not? You know, will you abort? Will you not do this for me? And when the coordinator gets enough votes, it makes its the final decision about whether to abort or not. And because of this rule, you know, must abort if any worker aborts. So if any worker says it will abort. It can also abort unilaterally. For example, if the coordinator, you know, doesn't want to do it for some reason. We'll talk about those reasons in a bit. This is going to be our key property. So when figuring out what we're going to do, we're going to collect these votes, and that's how we're going to make sure that everyone agrees on doing the operation. So something that's a bit weird here is you might say, wait, you know, why would workers decide to abort? Like, why would that be a decision? Or why would the coordinator decide to abort? And there are two sort of categories of reasons for this. So one category is that we need some way of dealing with, you can't actually do this. So for example, in my case of adding a student to a course, you know, maybe we discover, oh, the course is full. Or the course doesn't exist. Somehow you got confused about what courses exist, doesn't exist. Or maybe there's some sort of technical issue, which is not sort of a, like, the machine went down failure, but keeps us from doing this operation, like we're out of disk space. So in all these sorts of cases, the worker, which notices this condition, is going to want to say, wait a moment, can't do that, sorry. And it needs to say that so we don't have some other part of it done in the machine which doesn't have this problem. Like, we can add a student to the course because there's no course full requirement, been detected there. We don't want that to happen. So one reason we're going to have all ask all workers about this is to ensure this property. Now, sort of a subtlety about this restrictions like, is the course full, is what do we do with someone's being added to a course, you know, at the same time as someone else? And this is a very subtle thing of that there might be a conflict because we can have potentially multiple transactions happening at the same time. So two students are signing up for courses on SIS. They both add to a course which has one slot, and we're going to have a transaction, you know, for each of those. So student X is adding themselves, student Y is adding themselves. And while this is happening, you know, the worker may have agreed to add student X to the course, but it hasn't got confirmation to actually do that. And if the course would be full, the worker is not supposed to say yes in this case. So the worker should instead say, you know, has some options. So one option for this second transaction is the worker could just say, don't know yet, I'll get back to you in a bit. But an option the worker always has is to say, sorry, can't do that now. So there's the two options the worker has for transaction two. Because the worker already said it's going to add student to the course, you know, it has to guess that probably the course is going to be full. And at least, you know, assume that that's something it needs to deal with. Even though there's an off chance that if things go wrong, that maybe this first operation won't happen. Because some other worker will, like, be out of disk space or something. Okay. So that's sort of the obvious reasons why to abort. Why we would abort in normal operation. So the other sort of scenario where we'd want to abort is because we have a failure. This is one way we can deal with a failure is by, you know, treating it as the worker just said to abort. So this is, you know, because of, you know, inability to do the operation. So that's one reason that we would end up aborting. And on the coordinator side, as we'll learn, the coordinator, you know, can abort if it has trouble contacting workers. So if a worker seems to be down, the coordinator has the option of making its final decision saying, you know, none of the workers decided to abort, but I'm going to do that because I had trouble talking to one of the workers, even though I'm not sure whether, you know, any of them would actually have problems. Okay. So a subtlety with this idea of maintaining consistency. So here I'm telling you, okay, we have two operations that conflict. We have to, you know, not let the second operation happen until we know what the outcome of the first one is. And for things like adding to a course that might be full, like it's pretty clear, you know, why this sort of thing is necessary. That we can't do transaction two until we know, you know, whether or not the course is going to be full. We can't let that happen, even though it might be the case that transaction one will get aborted, because someone else can't do it, and it won't be full. But we also want to deal with this problem for read. So remember in our sort of poll question, we had this idea that we could read inconsistent results, and we want to avoid that too. And the way we can do that is by using a transaction for reads. So even though reads don't change anything, we want to get agreement that, yes, I can find the student in this course, and that's going to give us this consistency property. And that means that, you know, if we ask to read something that's being changed, either, you know, that transaction will fail and we'll have to try again, or it's going to wait until the value is no longer possibly changing. So this is how we avoid seeing inconsistent values. Now, we're going to have an assignment where you do two-phase commit, where we've kind of simplified this. And rather than having us do the full transaction thing, we just have workers give us a value with an unavailable flag. So if the value might be changing, they mark it as unavailable. If it isn't changing, they don't. But we need some way of knowing, of, you know, making sure that we don't try to use values while they're changing. And because we have this ability to not use values while they're changing, this means that even though we have values on multiple machines that can't change at the exact same time, you know, so if I have my course and my student, you know, we have, like, we change the student here, we change the course here, so it has the new value here, we're going to have some sort of window of time while this change is happening when we will disallow reads. And this means that overall we'll observe before and after, but we won't be able to see the value while it's potentially changing. And this means that if the change doesn't happen, we don't see a wrong value. Okay. So I went over sort of this idea of, you know, that we're going to get consistent values and that we're going to need to, like, prevent conflicts. And a key part of what's going to make this scheme work is that when we don't abort, if we say yes to transaction two, we are never, ever going to change our mind. So if a worker says, I'm not aborting, I'm committing, you know, I can do this operation, we can never change our mind. So we can't, so for transaction two, we can't agree to do it. We can't say, yes, I'm going to do this. Yes, I'm not going to abort, I'm going to do it until we're sure what the outcome of transaction one is. Can't make guesses. We can't say, oh, don't really want to do one because we agreed to do it. We can't take back. There's no taking back our decision once we tell the coordinator about it. Also, when the coordinator tallies up the votes and makes the final decision, that decision can't change. You know, we have to do that no matter what happens. These are going to be rules that are key to keeping us from getting into inconsistent states. And part of not changing our mind means that, you know, once we say, yes, I'm going to add the student to the course, we can't, like, decide, oh, I'm going to use that last slot for another student. And you know. But another part of it, it means that if we have a crash or a power loss, we have to remember the decision we made. So this means we need to remember, write down the decision in that persistent log before we do anything with it, so we don't change our mind. We can't tell the worker, yes, I'm doing it, and later tell them, no, I'm not. So to prevent that, we need to write down, yes, I'm doing it, before you tell the coordinator that. So if you lose power, you know, just after you tell the coordinator, you still remember, yes, I'm doing it. So we have these votes that are sort of unchangeable. And they're unchangeable because we're going to follow this protocol of always writing down, you know, what decision we've made before we do it. And the coordinator's job is to collect these votes and then choose the outcome and tell all the workers, hey, you're doing this or you're not. So if all the workers say, yes, I can do this, which we'll call committing, like we did with redo logs, you know, yes, I would like to commit this. The coordinator chooses to commit and tells all the workers, yes, now do it. You've agreed to, so I know you can. If some of the workers say, no, I can't do that for any reason, the coordinator always chooses to not do it. Then it tells all the workers, hey, you know that thing you promised to do? Don't do it. Sorry. Now, there's a question of, like, what happens if we can't talk to a worker? So if we have an unknown response, and one reason for this might be the worker is actually lost power, or another reason might be we just have a network failure that's temporary. In this case, the coordinator has choices. So one choice the coordinator can make is it can wait for the missing vote. It can just say, well, eventually this machine will give me a response. I'll just wait for that. Another choice the coordinator can make is the coordinator, because it, you know, is one of the participants, it can decide, we're aborting. You know, I don't know what's going on with this worker, but I'm not doing this. Let's not waste any more time. Okay. So questions about this sort of, you know, what the coordinator's decision is based on these votes. Okay. So I have sort of this high-level view. Let's look at how this is going to turn into an actual protocol. And we're going to talk about the two phases. I'm going to call the first phase preparing. This is where we get the votes from the workers. And the second phase, finishing, where we actually tell the workers, this is what we're doing. So with preparing, all the workers are going to send a promise. So the promise is either an agreement to commit, I will accept this transaction, or agreement not. And as I mentioned, they can't take it back. And when they make this promise, they're going to make sure that they can actually do it, that they're not going to run out of disk space, that they're, you know, or if they are, that that's going to be fixed before they, you know, let it, eventually, that there's not something conflicting, like we're not adding a student to a full class, and so on. You know, something that they're actually going to be able to do because they can't take it back. And otherwise, they're going to say, I'm not going to accept this. And that's also a promise, though it's one where, you know, there's no extra work for the worker, because if they say, I won't accept this, the coordinator can never decide to tell them to commit it. It has to abort. Everyone has to not do it. So the coordinator is going to get all these promises from the workers. And when it does that, it's going to make a global decision. And it's going to write that down before it makes it, so it doesn't forget it. If it has a failure, when the coordinator comes back up, we wanted it to like figure out, oh yeah, I had those votes, that's what I did. And in particular, we don't want it to be the case that the coordinator tells a worker, yes, do this, then crashes, comes back up, and tells another worker, no, don't do this. So the coordinator needs to remember, yes, I'm telling everyone to do it, or no, I'm not telling everyone to do it. And if the coordinator, you know, can't get votes, it's just going to keep trying or give up. One of the two. Or give up and abort. And tell everyone to abort. So once the coordinator makes the decision, we go to our second phase, which is this finishing phase. In the finishing phase, the coordinator, you know, says, we're committing, then the workers actually apply the transaction, like add the student to the class in their database. If the coordinator says abort, they abort the transaction, they just forget about it, undo it. And the idea of this aborting is that if you really wanted to do the operation, well, you still can, but you need a new transaction with a new preparing phase. And you just try until it works. You know, hopefully something changes that's going to make it possible for it to work. Now, a sort of subtlety with this is that, you know, what's going to happen if the coordinator doesn't tell the workers this, because maybe it tells them, but the message doesn't get there, right? Remember we said messages could get lost, or something like that, or the coordinator could crash. And there's sort of two options we have to deal with this. In the assignment, we're going to use the second option, which is that the coordinator is going to keep sending this until it gets a, yes, I got it. So we're going to make sure that when we decide to commit, that it actually happens by having the coordinator keep trying until every worker says, yes, I did it. Or if we decide to abort, then it actually happens, but we keep trying until every worker says, okay, I got that, I'm going to forget about this and, you know, not pretend it's going to still happen. Another option, which is also possible, is the workers could keep asking the coordinator, hey, I sent you a vote, I told you I would commit this a while ago, but you haven't told me what's up, give me an update. So the workers could just keep asking. So we have a way of ensuring that, assuming the network work and the machines work well enough that we get this outcome. Okay. So that's our high-level view. So let's go through some examples. And to talk about this, I'm going to talk about messages. I'm going to sort of abstract them. So we have our messages. We're going to have a message I'll call prepare. And this is the message where we send, here's what I want to do. Will you do it? And the coordinator sends that to every worker. Then the worker sends back a reply to this, which is either I'll call agree to commit or agree to abort. And this is the worker's vote. Do they want to do the operation or not? And then the coordinator sends to all the workers either commit, meaning actually commit, yes, everyone decided to do it, or abort, no, let's not do this. So in normal operation, the coordinator is going to contact all the workers with prepare. They're going to send back, hey, yes, I can do that. Then the coordinator is going to say, okay, everyone said yes, I'm going to tell everyone to actually do it. And remember that part of this is that before we send messages, we need to record what we've decided to do. So this means that the coordinator, before it sends prepare, is going to record I am starting to do a transaction. So it remembers if we have a failure here, we'll see examples of that, to try again. So the workers aren't left sort of in a half-done state, that we actually recover. And the worker, before it decides to send this agree to commit, is going to remember, yes, I agreed to do this. So it's going to write that down in its log. And the coordinator, before it tells everyone to commit, it's going to remember, yes, I agreed to commit this. So it never undoes that decision. And I have these written as state equals. And as we'll see, we'll kind of think of this like a state machine, sort of the finite automata way, where we're switching between states, and the log is writing down what state were we in when we, you know, crashed. And we'll look at that a little later. So this is normal operation with no conflicts. And with no failures, I mentioned that, you know, machines might want to abort, like it might decide the class is full, can't do this operation. In that case, the coordinator is going to get its votes. It gets votes for everyone, but the votes say, we're going to abort. So the coordinator, you know, remembers, okay, I decided not to do this, writes that down, and then sends the final decision, yes, I'm not doing this. Okay, so that's our conflict case. So this is, again, without failures. We'll look in a bit about what happens when there are failures. So first, let's do a little question here. See what we talked about with pulling. So when I told you, talked about like deciding to abort or not, what cases could a worker send a vote to abort? And note that some of these involve crashes. This will help us think about, you know, what we want to happen in scenarios where we have failures. Okay, I'll give another 10, 20 seconds. Okay, so we have consensus on this case, and I agree with that case. If we voted to abort, we could just rescind that, because maybe what happened is that we decided to do it, and then we crashed before we could send a reply to the coordinator. And we already made that decision. We can just tell the coordinator out as many times as you want. The coordinator is not going to get confused about what the vote tally is. It knows who's voting. So then we have some other answers. So I'll go in order of popularity that we have here. In response to a duplicate prepare message after replying to the first with a vote to commit. So one question is, why would we have a duplicate prepare message? So one possibility is the coordinator was running, and then it crashed, and then it started running again, and it didn't get a reply the first time. But other possibilities include that the coordinator, like, sent a prepare message, didn't get a reply, and thought it didn't get a reply, and sent another one. But a problem is that the coordinator might have received this. Might have received our first vote to commit. We don't know that. So one reason it might have received it is that this might be just a duplicate prepare message because the network had a problem and the coordinator needed to send it twice. And it thought the first one didn't get there, but it actually did. Another possible reason is that, you know, maybe we had a failure and our first message reply and our second reply are both going to get there, but they took a while. In either case, received our first vote. In this case, we're changing our mind and we're not allowed to do that. So even though it seems convenient, we can't change our mind. We can't vote to abort after we vote to commit. And this affects some of the other scenarios. So here, I can't do this because I already voted to commit. Doesn't matter how inconvenient I think it is, I cannot do it. And you might say, wait a moment, does this mean we just hang forever? Yes, it does. The coordinator's down for a very long time. Sorry, our system is down. You know, that transaction is not, we're not deciding it for a very long time. And in C, it's the same issue. We previously decided to vote for a commit. Our log doesn't tell us whether or not we sent that, but we have to assume the worst case is we did send it and crashed right after that. And so we have to assume the coordinator thinks we committed and that we may create a contradiction by deciding to abort. Okay, so questions? About these scenarios. Okay. So, we have those scenarios. So one thing that this brings up is that we have a problem with this protocol that I'll call blocking. That when we've agreed to commit something from a worker, we can't allow conflicting actions until the transaction gets resolved, you know, even if this takes a really long time. So this means that if one machine crashes, even though that, you know, there might be things we can do without that machine, all the operations that were pending have to remain pending until that machine comes back to make whatever decisions it needed to make. And what's worse, let's say we're in the middle of a transaction, we send some votes to the coordinator, and, you know, the coordinator goes down. If something happens at the wrong time, we might, you know, if the machine goes away forever, well, we might never decide what happens. You might say, well, that seems like a problem. It is. And in practice, the solution is in the rare cases where machines go away forever, we're going to have some sort of manual intervention to deal with that. Otherwise, our assumption is the machine eventually comes back and we can finish the operation, that it might take a very long time. And while it's happening, we might not be able to do things in order to maintain our consistency property, just in case, you know, it's not really down, you know, or it made a change or didn't make a change. Okay. So I kind of alluded to that we want to like sort of reason about this sort of more precisely, and I get this idea of states. And this is a very common way of modeling distributed systems and distributed protocols, is with a state machine, kind of like your, so DFAs you may have seen in 3102, probably other courses, I hope. So each machine is in some state, and the state tells us, you know, what operations we do and what we do in response to every message. And a really handy reason for having this in our distributed systems is to think about protocol correctness. So we want to figure out, do we always get to the right state? And, you know, what happens if we get any message at any point? This gives us a systematic way of reasoning about that, that we can look at this diagram, I'll show you an example in a second, and know, you know, all the possibilities. And we could actually even programmatically like represent this and sort of prove, yes, you know, we're going to get to this state, and or no, we're not, you know, no matter what order messages come in, no matter what failures happen, and so on. And it also allows us to avoid a very common error in implementing distributed systems, which is not realizing that you haven't handled a particular message at a particular time. Because we can easily say, you know, I'm not handling every possible message here, in this state, in this state, in this state. So for our coordinator, we could say represent it as, I'll have four states here. So we have this initialization state where we transition from that state to waiting by sending a prepare message to everyone. And then once we receive an abort message, we go to this aborted state. And once we receive this agree to commit message from everyone, we send a commit and go to the committed state. And when we receive abort, we send abort to everyone. And in these states, we have sort of a particular way we behave. So in the waiting state, we're accumulating votes. And this is going to be a common pattern. After any sort of failure, we're going to redo the operation failure. So the way our log's going to work is that, you know, actually this operation here is log in init, sorry, in waiting first, and then send prepare. And when we read the log, we're going to look at what state was I just going into and redo the thing that got me into that state. So here, we're going to redo sending abort because that's what we do when we enter the state. So if our log says we're in the aborted state, we resend abort. If our log says we're in the committed state, we resend commit. So this is the same sort of idea as redo logging, that the intention we write down is what state we want to go to, and the operation we redo is the thing we do to enter that state. Okay. And this like tells us our recovery strategy. So we have our log indicating the last state, and we resend the last message, which is the thing to enter that state. And something important about this is that it's going to be okay to have duplicate messages, that if we send prepare over and over again, that has to be work, because sometimes we're going to get confused because we lost power about whether we sent a prepare or not. And that's going to be okay because we're going to include a unique ID to identify any of these messages so workers can tell, oh, this is a prepare for the same thing I already saw. Let me respond in the same way. So our main way of dealing with failures is like redo what the log says we are based on our state. There's sort of a third option I'll just mention briefly, that sometimes we could decide to abort just to make things easier and then have if allowed, you know, i.e. haven't committed. If I haven't committed, I could just decide to abort rather than, like, resending everything. Just as an ease of implementation. But the most straightforward thing is we just resend what our log says we were about to send last. Now we have a third type of failure here. You know, what if the worker doesn't get our commit or abort? And as I mentioned, you know, I mentioned the options for this earlier. So in our assignment, we're going to have an actual acknowledgement here. So we're going to kind of have sort of an implicit third state committed and workers know. You know, after receive acknowledgement from all workers. That's what we're going to do in the assignment. I don't have that on the diagram because in general, another option is the worker could just say, hey, it's been a while. I haven't gotten your commit or abort. Tell me again. But yeah, either way, we just need some way of making sure that happens. So I showed you the state machine here and a bunch of things were kind of missing. So maybe a more complete version we would have is that we would send, we would say, we include the other messages. So here, so let's say we have a failure or timeout. We either resend the prepare or we abort. I should have drawn that line differently. So if we abort, we go to the aborted state from a failure or timeout. Otherwise, we resend prepare. If we get a vote from a worker, either agree or hit restore and tally it until we meet one of these conditions, we're going to abort it or commit it. And here, if we get sort of some sort of failure, we resend the commit. Here, if we get some sort of failure or a message from a worker, we resend the abort. So that sort of completes things. And if we were being very systematic about this, we'd look at all the types of messages we send and make sure we knew what happened in each of the cases here. And some of them are going to be errors, but we still want to make an explicit decision so we can kind of prove that our system does what we think it should do. And the worker, so for a failure in waiting, the coordinator can choose to send to abort or resend prepare. Yes. So there's two valid options. And the reason the coordinator can choose to abort is because remember, you know, the coordinator is one of the machines that needs to agree to do the transaction. So if it's more convenient, the coordinator can decide to abort the transaction. And that might be a reasonable outcome if it's having trouble contacting one of the workers. Does that answer your question? So on the worker, we can also represent a state machine. And here I have four states. I have init, agreed to commit, committed, and aborted. So when the worker agrees to abort, I go to write to the aborted state because we know that if the worker votes to abort, we're aborting. So we just go right there. We don't wait for us to receive an abort message because, you know, we don't care. We know it's going to happen anyways. We don't need to wait for the coordinator to tell us about it. Otherwise, we have this agreed to commit state where we said, you know, we're prepared to do the transaction, but we aren't, you know, actually sure until we get this commit message from the coordinator. And like with the coordinator state machine, you know, there's some other cases we have to deal with. So for example, if we've agreed to commit and the coordinator asks us, what are you doing for this transaction? Asks us to prepare again. We have to resend that, and probably what happened is the coordinator crashed, you know, before or after getting our previous agree to commit message, or got lost. And the same thing with the aborted state, if we get another prepare message, we have to say, no, I already told you, but I guess you didn't get it, we're aborting. Okay, so our failure recovery for the worker is going to be like the coordinator. We'll have a log indicating our last state, namely what we were about to do last, and we redo what we do for entering that state. And that means, you know, we wait for a prepare. If we haven't gotten anything, we, you know, are ready to resend our agree to commit or abort message, or if we're committed, we make sure we redo the operation in the same sort of way we do it in a file system. Because we've written down that we got the confirmation we need to do it. Okay, so these are sort of a state machine model. So that's sort of a systematic way of writing down it's possible. And I've sort of shown you sort of high level, I'm missing some cases here. So, like, I didn't say, what if a worker receives abort in the aborted state? What if it receives abort in init? How could that happen? Well, if we lost the prepare message, that could happen. And so the advantage of actually being really systematic, which I wasn't on the slides, is that if we go through all these messages, we can handle these sort of extra subtle little cases like this and make sure that we don't miss something. And if we specify everything, hopefully it's machine checkable. Okay, so that's sort of our state machine model. So with that in mind, let's look at, what might happen, in particular scenarios based on that sort of protocol I gave you. So let's talk about the worker fails, after repair without sending the votes. So one way this could happen is we send a repair, and, the worker, doesn't do anything. And, it's as if it never received it. The coordinator figures out, okay, something bad happened, and after assignment resends it. In this example, I'm showing the coordinator sort of has a timeout. So we're going to have an assignment where timeouts are like really annoying to test, because I don't want you to like run a test suite and have to wait 60 seconds every time you want to simulate a failure. So instead, we're going to have your coordinator crash when you don't get a reply and the testing code will reboot it. But it's the same idea as if the coordinator had a timeout and retried. But we'll just always reboot your coordinator to make this simpler. That's a real strategy you could use. You could imagine, rather than having manual code to deal with timeouts, you just crash the server and restart it because you know it can handle losing power. Okay. And in this version of the scheme, when it's sent the second time, we actually get all the votes together finally and we commit. And sort of the example I showed here, I was assuming, it didn't record the transaction. And this would also be a valid thing to do if it did record that, I agreed to commit, but it didn't get to send it. And that's probably how you'll deal with that case on the assignment, is that sometimes it will record that it sent something, but it didn't get there. And that's fine. So another case is that the coordinator, as I said, could abort. And the reason it can do this is because it's one of the ones who decides, everyone has to agree. So in this version of the scheme, we send that and the coordinator after a while or in the assignment after being restarted says, I didn't tell anyone to commit this, so I'm just going to decide for myself. I'm not going to bother figuring out what worker 2 wants. I'm just going to give up. And that's allowed. And the assumption is whoever is using our system is going to realize, couldn't add you to the course, try again later, and we'll try again later. So a third option, which might be a little more common, is that the worker could have recorded, I agreed to commit. And when it comes back up, it can proactively say, I remembered I was agreeing to commit. I'm not sure whether the coordinator got it. I'll resend it just in case, rather than waiting for the coordinator to tell me otherwise. Okay. So questions about these three ways, for the assignment, you'll use one of these two of dealing with, what happens if a worker goes down? Doesn't the worker have to respond with committed? So in our assignment, yes, we're going to have an acknowledgement here. That's an extra step. I'm not sure. The worker will, in our assignment, will do that. In a real two-phase commit systems, they sometimes don't do that and just rely on the worker eventually asking again instead of acknowledging. Eventually asking again, hey, I didn't get your commit message. Tell me again. And commonly a way they would do that is by saying, agree to commit again. And that would be a signal to the coordinator, oh, the worker didn't get it. Or acknowledge. You know. So agree to commit or would be what you do there. But yeah, the simplest way of dealing with it is to have the worker send an acknowledgement. Well, the way we're dealing with it in the assignment. Whether it's simple or not is debatable. So how about if we have a network failure during voting? So the worker doesn't crash, but one of its messages doesn't get there. Well, one way we can deal with that is by the coordinator just says, okay, I'm giving up. Another way we could deal with this, of course, is by having the coordinator resend the prepare. So notice that this scenario is actually identical to the worker failing. That, from the coordinator's point of view, it looks the same. Now, the tricky case for this is, what do we do if there's a failure while we're committing? So we've made a decision to commit, but something bad happens. And there's sort of two options here. And the first one is what we're doing for the assignment, is that the coordinator needs to resend that outcome to the worker. Notice that we can't give up. You know, cannot give up, cannot abort, because we've decided to commit. And it might be the case that one of the workers got the message, and once one of the workers got the message, we can't take it back because they did something for the transaction. So in the assignment, the way we're going to have you deal with this is by having the workers acknowledge the commits with this extra message, as I mentioned. And this is actually no extra work in the assignment because we're going to use RPC to communicate between the coordinator and the worker. And the RPC has a return value whether you want it or not. So that's what your acknowledgement's going to be. So in that scheme, you know, what's going to happen? We have a worker failure. The coordinator is going to resend. And a tricky thing about this is, you know, how many times do we try? How long do we wait? So in the assignment, the coordinator crashes and is rebooted. Basically, you crash because the RPC call to send the commit fails, we reboot you, and you retry when we reboot you. In a real system, maybe there'd be something more complicated, like you'd have a timeout sort of management thing and retry without like crashing the whole thing. Coordinator and restarting it. So this is what you're going to do in the assignment with those acknowledgments. A strategy that many real systems use is that when the worker comes back up, it sends proactively something to the coordinator. That's not going to be allowed in the assignment. Okay. So questions about sort of this timeline. So I've kind of alluded to the assignment. Let me go over how the assignment works. So in the assignment, you're storing a single value across workers just to keep things as simple as possible. And the key thing we want to do is we want to update that value in a consistent way, that it should never be the case. I talk to worker one, get, you know, A, talk to worker two, get B, talk to worker one, get A. That shouldn't happen, you know. Either the value was A or was B, not like something in between. So all our workers, which are, you know, I'll call replicas, have the same value or are unavailable. And unavailable means value may be being changed. So that unavailable is substituting for, hey, I can't do this right. I can't give you the value right now because I'm in the middle of changing it, potentially. And this should happen even if there are failures. So we're going to crash your work, you know, restart, crash your worker, crash your coordinator, and everything should stay this way, even though that's happening. And in the assignment, you're going to be using RPCs, and workers will only talk to the coordinator by replying to RPC. This is mainly to make it practical to test your code with failures. So the coordinator is always going to initiate communication by making RPC calls. And the RPC system is what will detect workers being down or slow. So you're just going to rely on any sort of communication failure, whether a worker's down or a message is lost or something like that, becoming an exception. And we'd like you to crash whenever that happens. We'll just restart you. And this means, because of this, you're going to verify that a commit or abort is received, because the RPC call will have a return value and will fail if it doesn't get that. So in the assignment, we're going to, deal with your errors by having you always return an error, fail if you detect failure, and we'll just restart the coordinator and or workers on a failure. And when your coordinator starts, you're going to need to send messages to recover the state. So that's where you're going to have your code, which is like, oh, when I last shut was, unceremoniously shut down, you're going to read a log and find out, oh, I need to resend a prepare or I need to resend a commit. Another thing about the assignment is I mentioned sort of the most obvious failure types of messages being lost or sent, but the reply is lost, which could either be because of network or the worker down or worker problem. But another scenario you need to deal with is messages being delayed. And why is this a problem? Well, let's say I have this scenario here. I prepare something, that prepare gets lost, I resend the prepare. Okay, that seems fine. Then I start my next operation. But maybe this message wasn't really lost. Maybe what happened is that the message was really slow. And we'll get it here. And you need to make sure that you don't get confused by this. What's the solution? The easy way of handling this is to have ID numbers so you realize, wait a moment, we're in ID 1. ID 0 doesn't matter anymore. Okay, so that's just something you need to deal with. And it's something that real two-phase commit systems need to worry about. It's like, wait, there's some message from an old transaction. Let's make sure I don't act on that when I'm not supposed to. Okay. So that's the assignment I have on two-phase commit. So two-phase commit, so this has workers work together, but it's kind of fragile. When things go down, our decision is basically that, it's not going to work until we restart everything and everyone's working again. And I mentioned very early on, when talking about sort of general motivations for distributed systems, that we'd often, want to actually deal with, working in spite of some machines not going down. And there are ways of doing this, which are, you can think of as kind of extensions of two-phase commit, where instead of having the data split across multiple machines, that we're going to have the data duplicated on multiple machines. And this is going to let us work despite failing nodes. And we just want to require enough to be working, meaning no longer unanimous voting. So instead, we'll have majority voting. So rather than requiring everyone to agree to do the operation, we'll be fine as long as enough nodes agree, like a majority. This is with fail stop. There are solutions which require a supermajority, which work with even Byzantine failures. As long as enough nodes are working, we can use a similar type of scheme to handle more failures. The details of this are actually very complicated, and we definitely don't have time to go into them, but I want you to be aware that they exist. So, before I finish up for today, sort of questions on, you know, two-phase commit, or sort of the very high-level idea of extending that to more than, to, you know, allowing only some nodes to work if we duplicate all the data. Okay, so that's where I will leave off for today then.